Sorry, we need a lot of attention this morning.
Well, good morning. Hope you're feeling comfortable in here. It's much better than being outside. We want to go over the announcements and then we'll do the reading of the declaration before we start the meeting. So you're all aware of Sundays that we meet from 11 to noon. The doors open at 10:30. And as we said, this being the month of June, we have two more sessions, really one more session, which is really coming up, which will be a special meeting on June 21st. Not only is it Father's Day, it's also ULT Day. And ULT, its mission and future, will be the subject matter. It's a devotional type meeting. We just ask people to try to get here a little early and get settled before the meeting starts. Then, on June 28th, we're giving you a heads up, we're starting our summer program. And we will be reading articles from Universal Theosophy by Robert Crosby. So we will be starting off on the 28th, will be our first summer session. Also on Wednesday evenings, we have our study class. And prior to our study class, the library is open from 5:15 to 7:15. And then at 7:30 to 8:30, the main class begins. And we are finishing up our sessions in The Ocean of Theosophy by William Q. Judge. The library, as we stated, being opened earlier, there's always usually a reference for that class. The reference is in the library, and plus there's always someone there to help you look for some subject matter that you might want to look into. Basically, those are our sessions that we have. Now we'll do our reading. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles. Through a truer realization of the self and a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teachings, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers. The sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. The reading, introduction reading, is excerpts from The Light on the Path. Regard earnestly all the life that surrounds you. Learn to look intelligently into the hearts of men. Regard most earnestly your own heart. For through your own heart comes the one light which can illuminate life and make it clear to your eyes. Study the hearts of men that you may know what is that world in which you live and of which you will be a part of. Regard the constantly changing and moving life which surrounds you, for it is formed by the hearts of men. And as you learn to understand their constitution and meaning, you will by degrees be able to read the larger word of life. Speech comes only with knowledge. Attain to knowledge, and you will attain to speech. I forgot the title.
The title of our talk this morning is The Intelligent Heart. No, it's the loving intellect and the intelligent heart. Although perhaps the heart should come first. In thinking about this subject, there's so much in the philosophy on it, whether you call it the eye doctrine versus the heart doctrine, or the exoteric versus the esoteric, the outer, the inner. There's so many ways to look at it. But what it comes down to is for each one of us, how do I use my powers? And briefly, we should look just a little at intellect and heart from the theosophical viewpoint before we even go into that. Mr. Judge in The Ocean wrote, "Intellect alone is cold, heartless, selfish." So obviously we do not want to become intellectual. Madame Blavatsky wrote, "There are persons who never think with the higher faculties of their minds at all." Of course, she then reminds us that people that do think that way never descend to the vulgar or the ordinary or the cold or the selfish. The human brain is simply the canal between the psycho-spiritual plane and the material. Therefore, it's an important instrument, and science of today is more and more beginning to realize that there are more messages sent from the heart to the brain than from the brain to the heart. There's an entire study of it called heart math, and it shows that we influence our thinking through our feeling more than we even realize. But we're warned in the philosophy, even ignorance is better than head learning, with no soul wisdom to illuminate and guide it. We'd like to read a quote from perhaps the intellect of our age, Albert Einstein. "Our age is proud of the progress it has made in man's intellectual development. The search and striving for truth and knowledge is one of the highest of man's quality, though often the pride is most loudly voiced by those who strive the least. And certainly we should take care not to make the intellect our God. It has, of course, powerful muscles, but no personality. It cannot lead, it can only serve, and is not fastidious in its choice of a leader. The intellect has a sharp eye for methods and tools, but is blind to ends and values. So it is no wonder that this fatal blindness is handed from old to young, and today involves a whole generation." So if he didn't think that much of the intellect, what did he think of the heart? He wrote a letter to his daughter, Liesl, and gave instructions that these letters were not to be published until decades after his death. And they were published in 1980. And this is one of them. When I proposed the theory of relativity, very few understood me. And what I will reveal now to transmit to mankind will also collide with the misunderstanding and prejudice in the world. I ask you to guard the letters as long as necessary, years, decades, until society is advanced enough to accept what I will explain. There is an extremely powerful force that so far science has not found a formal explanation to. It is a force that includes and governs all others, and is even behind any phenomenon operating in the universe and has not yet been identified by us. This universal force is love. Albert Einstein. Now, if we can't respect anyone else for an intellectual issue, who else? What's left? And he says love is the most important. In Psychic and Noetic Action, we find the higher mind or higher ego, which Theosophy says we are as spiritual beings. That's what we are. The higher mind operating through lower principles is part of the essence of universal mind, unconditionally omniscient on its own plane. We are unconditionally omniscient on our own spiritual plane, but only potentially so in our terrestrial sphere, as it has to act solely through its alter ego, the personal self. So we come down to the issue of the fact that as spiritual beings, we have the higher mind in full. As incarnated beings, we only have what we can attract through the way we think and the way we feel. Now, how do we lift those two elements? Seriously, how do we do it? How do we make our intellect loving? And how do we make our heart more intelligent? Well, it's simply a question of effort and study. If our effort is to be smarter and wiser and know more than the next person, have everybody look to us with admiration and respect because of our brilliance, well, then we are killing the true side of our nature. Compassion, it is said, is a universal law. It's not an attribute. It is ourselves in our real nature. So you cannot kill that and expect to reflect what you have as a spiritual being. So intellect then is a tool. And you improve a tool by proper use and care. If thoughts were food, would we realize how we're poisoning ourselves by what we take in? Just to sit and watch the news without discrimination, we are poisoning ourselves in a way. We're taking in toxic things, especially if there's been some kind of awful event, whether it's a hurricane or a flood or whatever it is. It is repeated over and over and over, and we take it in over and over. We don't need that. See it once if you are interested in what happened, but then from then on, turn away from it. use your mind and brain and intellect in a healthier way. Read something that's uplifting. Decide, learn a new language. Put your mind to work on its level. But think about the food you put in your mind day in and day out. And that includes if a mood pops up, realize that it's like the weather. It's something that returns on its own cycle. And if you're interested in becoming a scientist, take a notebook and call that notebook My Stupid Moods. And write down the date and the time the mood awakened in you. And then when it returns, you will see, I can expect this every 6 weeks. It is a cycle. It's my cycle. It's my weather. Therefore, I can be in control. I can change it. And we can turn to devotional materials and learn how to change it. But first, we have to know it's there. So we have to keep track of our mind and our use of mind. In Occultism versus the Occult Arts, HPV wrote, the mind, which we have agreed to call the human soul, is a compound in its highest form of spiritual aspirations, volitions, and divine love, and in its lower, animal desires and terrestrial passions. It is thus the mind alone, the sole link between the man of earth and the higher self, that is the sufferer, and is in danger of being dragged down by those passions. So according to the philosophy, we are thinkers, reincarnating egos, using the mind to contact life and to pay off our debts from the past and to share, hopefully, what we have learned. Two things we found on the internet yesterday. The worst battle you have to fight is between what you know and what you feel. Think about that. And then this one that made us laugh out loud. They say that what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. At this point, I should be able to bench press a Buick. Maybe that sounds a little silly, but a sense of humor may be the only link sometimes between how we think and how we feel. We may think that everything that is happening to us, to the world, to those we care about, is rotten and despicable, and we're full of despair. And that thinking makes us feel depressed and hopeless. But then stand a moment in the position of the soul and realize, wait a minute, I am space. Nothing and no one can ever harm me. The only thing that harms me at all, and it's not permanent, is my own stupidity. I will reap the results of the stupid actions and feelings that I have had. That's fair. So if I am space and life and power, and all that I see in the universe around me, isn't it pretty silly to be depressed? What stops us? Only one thing, the way we think and feel. We have that power. If we could stop and laugh at ourselves, the whole world is a different place to us for that moment. Mr. Crosby says, and we don't know about you, but we like going to various places so that we get a rounded picture of an explanation. He says the mind is the power to think, And then all these ideas are the product of that. Now, we walk around acting on the basis of the ideas that we hold. But how often do we sit down and say, wait, are these ideas worth holding, worth keeping? Where did I get them? Why do I believe that? Why do I think that? How do I know that? And that perhaps is the greatest gift theosophy gives us, because it offers an explanation in contrast to what we might always have merely accepted. We are asked to question, to think, to reason, to use our mind. And we have to start with questioning our own ideas, because you cannot have a new idea. What's the expression? You can't put new wine in old bottles. You can if you clean out the bottles first. So we have to rid ourselves of many of the ideas that we have carried and are acting upon without even knowing it. There are so many wonderful things in the devotional books. The mind is the great slayer of the real. Let the disciple slay the slayer. That's in the Voice of the Silence. If you've never read it, read it. Read it several times. And be aware that Elvis Presley used to give copies of it to people. He thought it was the most important book in his life. Blaise Pascal was a French philosopher. He died in 1692, so he's not modern, but his thinking certainly is. And his most famous quote, we think, "The heart has its reasons, of which reason knows nothing." Now, we all know that's true. We have intuitions, or we might call them gut feelings about something or someone, and we can't prove it through reason, but we know it's true. Now, Pascal doesn't say that, but it's because we return with definite remembrances, soul wisdom about certain things that have become so much a part of our nature, they're reflected in the new personality. If we would like to have better things for the next life, start working on acquiring them now. Make them part of your vitality. He also said, all of our reasoning ends in surrender to feeling. Small minds are concerned with the extraordinary. Great minds with the ordinary. What a wonderful clue that is. Take your ordinary life and watch it for one whole day. Learn to see the majesty and the power and the beauty in it, and learn what your response is to the most ordinary things. Do you wish people to think well of you? Don't speak well of yourself. We like this man. The least movement is of importance to all nature. The entire ocean is affected by a pebble. Now, that's another definite clue to us. We don't see ourselves ordinarily as important in any way, and yet we're a pebble to the great ocean of life. And we do color and affect it and everyone and everything around us. If, as Theosophy teaches, universal brotherhood is a fact, then we're a cell in the body of that brotherhood. And as we are healthy and growing and sharing, the body is that much more healthy and growing. But it's up to us. We can't be made to be wise. the Gita notes, if you want, and we're going to be studying the Gita this summer again, which is such a privilege and such a joy. And the chapter 2 of the Gita notes, we've always thought if we were stranded on an island somewhere and could only have one devotional book, that would be it. Or even just that chapter, because the entire philosophy of the Gita is captured in that chapter. All the passing shows of life, whether fraught with disaster or full of fame and glory, are teachers. He who neglects them neglects opportunities which seldom the gods repeat. And the only way to learn from them is through the heart's resignation. For when we become in heart completely poor, we are at once treasurers and dispersers of enormous riches. Holding on to nothing just for myself, but acquiring that I may give and share. The attitude to be assumed then is that of doing every act, small and great, trifling or important, because it is before us to do, and is a mere carrying out by us as instruments of the will of that deity who is ourself. Oh, we have so much more, including an incredible article about students in Harlem in an elementary school where the children are cultivating emotional intelligence through meditation, and how it has changed their behavior, changed their education level. But we wanted to end, and we'll apologize ahead of time if we cry, because every time we read this out loud, we have cried. So we'll try to behave. This is written by Mother Teresa. We don't know why we've never seen this before in our lives, but we have put copies out there so that if you want to, and we assume you will want to, you can take it home with you. Mother Teresa wrote, "People are often unreasonable and self-centered. Forgive them anyway. If you are kind, people may accuse you of ulterior motives. Be kind anyway. If you are honest, people may cheat you. Be honest anyway. If you find happiness, people may be jealous. Be happy anyway. The good you do today may be forgotten tomorrow. Do good anyway. Give the world the best you have, and it may never be enough. Give your best anyway. For you see, in the end, it is between you and God. It was never between you and them anyway." Your questions are invited. Doesn't mean they'll be answered. Yes. Yes.
Part of this question, of course, comes off the last quote. It was mentioned that if we're listening to the TV over and over again about a particular horrible event, that maybe just listen it once so it doesn't keep impressing us. But what if our job is to be the newscaster and continually talk about such things? Or more to the point, what if you live in a family where one of the members is constantly berating us or talking about all the problems we have, and we can't so easily turn them off?
Oh, there should be such a button. Of course, they'd use it on us as well.
So how do we make our heart, in that case, more intelligent in dealing with that?
Now, that is a brilliant question. Have any of you had this experience, and what did you do? Yes.
Well, we would think about such things as tragicomedy. Mm-hmm. And literary art, wherein the story is tragic, yet
But the tragicomedy, of course, is always there. It's the basis of all human interaction. But how, and let's take it with the family one, because we all have families, how do we, being berated by someone, how do we keep our heart and mind open and loving? Especially if it's undeserved berating, which is the way it usually happens. What position do we take? Yes?
Well, our problems often arise because of our attachment, whether we hold this person in high regard or low regard. We need to just be detached and be neither of those and have an equal mind about it. And if we don't react, oftentimes they will stop.
That was something that my mother always told me, and I didn't understand it for many years, having nothing but older brothers. She would always say, if you'd stop reacting, they would stop teasing and bullying you. We never understood that. Yes?
It helps to try and understand where the
because our world is one of media communication.
Yeah.
If we don't hear it on the radio, we see it on TV, and it's on the front page of the paper as well. We were thinking, if we could for just a moment put ourselves in the other's position, let's say it's siblings fighting with each other, if one of them would for a moment say, how would I feel if I were receiving what I'd been sending out? If we can stand in the other's position, we immediately do not feel like defending ourselves. We feel like understanding. And once you begin in that process, we can't think of the terms, but it's like if you're fighting an opponent and the opponent turns into a paper bag, you can't fight them. There's nothing there to fight against. So we can begin that way in watching our attitude. Yes?
Well, sure, but a lot of people will say let bygones be bygones or forgive and forget, and that's kind of naive depending on the situation. Forgive always, and the person who forgives is really helping himself or herself, because if you don't and you just hold on to things, you're just going to manifest it somehow physically in a sick way. So forgive. But at a certain time, depending on the conditions, yeah, forgive and adjust. So you don't allow the conditions to recreate themselves and the cycle to go on and go on. Learn from it, make the proper adjustment. And you can maintain a little more peace.
Theosophy does not teach forgive and forget,
right,
but forgive and grow up from. Things come to us because we magnetically attract them by our thinking, by our feeling, by our actions. So if we don't like what we're attracting, we certainly forgive the other for bringing us what we ordered. But we don't forget in the sense that I have to work on me. I have to fix what it is in me that seeks this, that's bringing this to me. And it's a slow process. process, but it's something that every soul has to do in evolution. In the back.
There was an article a couple of weeks ago, or maybe a couple of months ago, on one of our theosophical journals, and the title of it was Making Pain a God. I won't go through the whole article, but it's very
how wonderful if you could.
Well, it was telling me why not to, but at the very end of the article, it's stated that one individual who lived in a town with this antagonistic person who was so bad, the whole village wanted him to leave. He finally got the message and left, but the wisest man in the town went out and searched for him and brought him back. He said because his existence was such a challenge that it helped him to grow. You find that most people who are attack you because they fear you or they envy you or they're jealous of you. You can learn from that. And if you take that away, if you don't have that, often that guidance, that, compass, well, without having that compass, you fall backwards, not forwards. Someone challenge your existence like that causes you often to grow, to learn,
to evolve. But it is each one of us. It is our responsibility to find our compass, set our compass, and hold our position. Why do we get thrown? Because someone we care about is full of anger or annoyance or whatever the passion is that's coming from them. They're not happy with you at that moment, which makes you unhappy with you, and it just kind of escalates from there. If we could stand back at that moment and say, well, and literally say out loud, what is it that I said or did that makes you feel this way? Because I certainly didn't mean to. And a little bit of honesty instead of defensiveness can go a long way. Yes.
These are not easy things.
No.
But it seems that it's easier to do that than to keep control of our heart when we see that same person attacking or reviling another person we love.
Mm.
Then
yeah.
It seems as though all our discipline goes out the window, because what we could do for ourselves, when we see it to happen to somebody else, we don't know what to do. Do we defend that person at the expense of riling up the other person more? Do we stay back and be relaxed and contemplative and let the other person go on berating? It's really a difficult challenge, and we were wondering what we could do.
Well, we would suggest you see a psychiatrist. First of all, it never helps to try to carry someone else's burden. Someone we love is being attacked. We can't at that moment step in, defend them, do anything. What we can do after the fact is offer them the appropriate food for their own character, what they might need to read and understand. But if we try to help them in the moment, we literally weaken them and enrage the other. This earth stuff is hard, you know? People think college is hard. This is what's hard, working with your own heart and mind. Yes?
The question that arose was what was reiterated. Don't have resistance in our life, we're not going to grow. It's like a bodybuilder keeps on adding more and more weights, more resistance. And the resistance is what makes us strong. But when someone's berating someone else in your presence, we always thought that it was best to speak to the person that was berating someone and say, I don't think that's true. You know, is that really necessary? But there's a word of caution.
Right. Well, it depends on the relationship, doesn't it? We always thought the wisest response to anything like that, if one can muster it, is to say, if someone is attacking you, well, you could have said much worse. And that's Epictetus's great line, when a student said, one of his other students was saying terrible things about him, and Epictetus said, well, he could have said much worse. Who cares? Let it go. The thing is that someone else's opinion doesn't make it real. Someone can say you're wonderful, but you're not. Someone can say you're stupid or horrible, but you're not. It's their opinion, and you can just leave them with that opinion. And you worry about taking care of and fixing and changing what you see needs to be done. Yes? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. It's an opinion, isn't it? Well, one of our problems is we go around with opinions about ourselves that aren't true. We have known people to turn down opportunities because their opinion was, oh, I couldn't do that. Well, how do you know? And if the person offering you the opportunity is intelligent, then they obviously believe that you could do it. We think we're weak, we think we're miserable, we think maybe we don't have a great intellect, we think all these things that are just opinions. We have to find out by challenging ourselves. Yes?
Let's call all those feelings rain.
Rain?
Rain. I can see clearly now the rain is gone. We have to suffer through pain and hurt and all the things that were mentioned before the mind can clearly understand what has happened and do something wise about it.
Well, you know, the next line of that song is the one people usually leave out. They're thinking, oh, this is wonderful. I can see clearly now. But the next line is, I can see all obstacles in my way. Oh. It isn't a moment of rejoicing unless we're willing to work on the obstacles. But what could be better if you're stuck in something and you don't know what it is? You're stuck there forever. But if you see the obstacles, you can begin to work your way out of it. Yes?
Perhaps you're looking at this from the wrong point of view.
Perhaps.
We think that the person being berated has the problem, but perhaps the person doing the berating has the larger problem.
Well, of course. Of course that's true. Any time that we step forward and attack someone else, we have the larger problem. That doesn't change the fact that the ones who are being attacked have problems. But it isn't easy to stop an attack by pointing that out to the attacker, because they're just going to think you're even worse than they thought you were. Yes?
Well, that's for your digestion, not for theirs. You know that this person has a problem. Why let it, you know, that should give you the strength to say, well, he might step in the mud, I'm not going to let it splash on me.
Oh, do you know what Ben Franklin said? And it's a wise little lesson, because sometimes when people might attack us and there might be others around, we might defend ourselves. He said, no. When someone throws mud at me, I wait and let it dry. Because if you let it dry, you can just brush it right off. We would like to, it's a personal experience, but it was very real and powerful, and along this line. we were being attacked by a family member, whether justified or not, it wasn't, but, and we defended ourselves. I never said that, I never did that, and the attack grew even worse. And the response was, oh, you theosophists, you think you're so special. And immediately, I wasn't in a defensive mood, I was stunned. Do you really think that I think I'm special because I studied this? No, I don't think that. Well, then why did you say it? Because when you're in an argument, you pick up anything you can find and you throw it. The minute you start to understand that, the next time you're in an argument, you're thinking, you know what? This person doesn't even mean what they're saying. They're attacking. And in the attack, they want a response from you. If you don't make it, they drop their weapons and leave. I think that's the most significant thing I ever learned about human relations, and it definitely changed my life. But it was there the whole time. From the time we're little children, we're in little battles, and they're really not real. They're just ways of proving, what's the word? A leadership or I'm two steps ahead of you sort of thing. They're silly. Yes?
In one of the articles, Mr. Judge, Musings on the True Theosophist Path,
mm-hmm.
it says once you gain a little bit of soul knowledge, you should think of yourself as special or better than may be better than you, and probably
right.
are. But he says your path becomes more difficult. Your obligations become more difficult. But at least you can hope. And we always thought that it was the power of those doctrines of reincarnation and hope
right.
and evolution and perfectibility that made it possible to go on and deal with.
And the fact that you have done that one thing, all you ever have to do is prove a law once. Prove it to yourself once, and then you know it works, and I can do this. Hope is magic. You know, if you read the fascinating story of how we, as thinkers working together, brought this incredible planet into being. It's all on hope. It's all on building something better than it was in the past. And right now, because of the cycle we're in, the Iron Age, it looks pretty bad. But when does the room start getting clean? When it's the most messy and everything is chaotic. And it starts being straightened out. So if we, as individual souls, begin and keep up this effort, it is said that we attract those wise ones who are waiting to come back to this planet and assist more and more. They're called the Nannis, G-N-A-N-I-S. To attract the Nannis back, we can be part of that attraction. It's our choice. Yes?
It was mentioned that the Greek tragedies, they wore a mask. And I guess our lives are like those Greek tragedies. We all wear a mask.
Mm-hmm.
And this mask that we have developed, we have cultivated, and we have polished and shined it.
And love.
What it has done is hid from us our weaknesses or our faults or
mm-hmm.
those false ideas that we have. And it doesn't want us to see them because as long as we don't see them, it's in control. What can we do to unlock that personality so that we can open it up and take a peek at it? We know that the idea of karma and reincarnation has certainly unlocked one of those doors for us. The fact that there's outside personal God that has unlocked another door. Would you have any other suggestions of what things will unlock that door, the personalities?
Well, what do you think? The personal nature, which we have built up, it's a composite of many, many lives and tendencies, and we have it now in this particular way. It wants to live. It is an animal nature, and it wants to live at any cost, and will fight us. So remember, it's one mind we have, can either go to the higher or the lower, and we spend most of our time in the personal and the lower. So that's very protective of itself. How can we get around that? Any ideas? All right, we'll throw out two. Meditation. Every time you stop and put your mind in that higher position, your true nature, the personal is absolutely subdued. You have to then return and make the proper use of it, which often we don't. Another one is devotional books. Before you go to sleep at night, read a few paragraphs from a devotional book to put you in a particular tone or condition, because it is said that as we enter the sleep state, we go through a channel that we call the dreaming state, the astral plane, on our way to our deeper sleep state, which is our natural spiritual condition. And in coming back from that spiritual refreshment, we have to again go through that astral, and it colors and distorts the experiences we have had. So there's meditation, devotional books, quiet time of any time, any chance that you get where you feel your personal nature waking up. It's angry or it wants something. Stop and ask, what is this? What is going on? Don't try to change it, because that won't work at that point. Try to see what it is, to label it, to have it in your perspective. It's like watching a pet animal. You have to understand how it works. Yes?
Well, we found that in coming here, we were introduced to many ideas that we had not considered. But one of them was that we always never felt elevated. We always felt like we were poor, miserable sinners. And that if we listened to Darwin in the material sense, that we've evolved from apes.
And that's not fair, because Darwin himself,
it was interpreted.
Yes.
And but that very idea is degrades us, because we didn't know exactly why. We're just an animal. So what if we do animal things?
Right.
And then all of a sudden we find out that we're, as you had said, divine in our true nature. So that alone elevates us to consider things.
Mother Teresa, for in the end, it is between you and God. You and your own higher nature. The same in all life. There is only one self. You and that one self, that's what it's between. So anything you think, anything you feel, you are laying at that altar. Because even though it's coming from and stirred up by your personal nature, it comes from that one mind that is you as a soul, as a spiritual being. So every time you get a glimpse of yourself being selfish or separate, note it. Try to find out what caused that feeling. What is it I'm after? What do I want that I felt such a thing? And realize that effort you are also laying at the feet of your own higher nature. It is a sacrifice that's not a sacrifice, because it's like food for the soil. soul. Well, it is soil and soul. Yes, in the back.
Mr. Crosby made a statement in one of his books. He said, if thought is to rise higher, it must do so without the brain.
Right.
What does that reflect that's, on our
That's an excellent point. Are we through, though, with the personal, that, you know, methods? Because nothing could be more important. It truly is the fundamental issue for us as incarnated thinkers. How do I get around this sense of being a personal, separate being? Yes?
Well, you had mentioned that during our summer sessions on Wednesday evenings, we're going to be studying the Bhagavad Gita. And there is no better.
Yes. Yes, it is an absolute prescription of spiritual health. Yes.
Just that follow up the idea that pride, make pride and self-regard of the person they are now in bond maidens to devotion. We have to respect our personality, but also if it does have a desire or passion, try to redirect it towards some higher surface. We have to take those steps.
Right. We have a sense of pride, and that's good, but we turn it around to, I will not fail this inner feeling that I have, that I'm a spiritual being. I may fall down, but I will get up. What is the Japanese expression? Fall 8 times, get up 9. It's that nothing will keep me away from this because it is my choice. I choose to honor being a spiritual being. Yes?
Just to get back to the previous...
Yes, that last quote.
No. We've sort of sidetracked with other ideas of a personality, but there was the previous question.
Well, that wasn't a question. It was a quote from Mr. Crosby. Would you like to repeat it? That thought?
If thought is to rise higher,
and it is the heart that will lift us. And it is within our own feeling nature. In order to have that higher feeling, that intuition, we have to clean out many of the lower feelings. You know, we have been raised in an environment that says competition is not only natural, it's necessary. Well, that's ridiculous. We are all one, so how can we be competing with each other? We compete over food, over water, over everything. The fact is that we have to accept our responsibility as part of one whole. And we'd just like to repeat and remind you that if you want a copy, it's there on the book table. Give the world the best you have, and it may never be enough. Give your best anyway. For you see, in the end, it is between you and God. It was never between you and them anyway. Meeting is adjourned.